try to share our experience of how we have set up our labs, but many, many more people in the room have set up labs either recently or less recently. So please feel free to interrupt us and to contribute, to say what you think, and also to ask questions. So the instructions, what do we need? What can we borrow? And I think between our two talks, we're going to cover maybe a bit more than that with our own experience. So the equipment, I decided to tell you what we had when I came. So I moved to the University of Washington in January 2015, and Tamir Gonen had left for a few years, I believe. So microscopes were already there, but the department was looking into hiring cryo-EM people to be able to run them. So what we had at the time were the Morgani, which was not equipped with a CCD, and so we moved a CCD to be able to use it. And I have to say, this microscope is amazing. For negative staining, you're in and out in 5 minutes. And so we have tens and tens of users per day. And the first step is always to look at, we love negative stain. I'm going to talk about that after. We heard different opinions, but I think the first thing to do is to look at your sample using negative stain. So Morganis, unfortunately, are not sold anymore. That's too bad. But if you're lucky to have one or an equivalent microscope, JOL might have equivalent microscopes. That's very, very useful. So we also had a Spirit, T12 Spirit, with a 4K CCD. And so we installed Legionon on this microscope, and it's also very convenient. We used it to collect data in negative stain. So you have grids that are already perfect because you looked at them in the Morgani. So all the time on the Spirit is for data collection. And we use it a lot for screening cryo grids. And for example, the ion channels I talked about yesterday, 200 kilodalton on protein. Andrew collected the preliminary data sets on the TF20 and equal C class averages. It's enough to see the sample. It's good. Obviously, it's not, you don't see a lot of features, but it's plenty enough to know if you have different orientations. It's good enough to know if the class averages are reasonable. And people really love it in the lab because you load samples, cryo samples, and same, you're in and out very, very quickly. So it's really convenient. And finally, at the time, our higher-end microscope was a TF20 with a K2. And that also workhorse microscope. We liked it a lot. Obviously, it's a side entry holder, so it's not as good as other microscopes that we have heard of in the previous talk. But that works very well. You can obtain, we have obtained very good maps we were happy with. So I think you can get started with that. This is how we did it. But if you don't have a higher-end microscope than that when you start, be ready to fundraise, and this is what we did. Maybe you can negotiate as part of your startup package to have a higher-end microscope from the get-go, either a Telos Arctica, as Mark has been using, or a Creos. So it depends a bit of what the university can do. So if you have to install the Creos, space considerations become a major issue. Depending if you're at a private institute or public universities, things can move at a different speed. Space in public universities is a very sensitive topic. And for the Creos, you need a 13.5 feet ceiling height at the minimum, and that's not that easy to find. So what you absolutely need if you have any side entry microscope is a cryo holder, pumping station. So it takes 4 to 6 months to deliver, so you have to think about that. We were lucky that one of our colleagues, Kelly Lee, already had a cryo holder and then let us borrow it for the first 4 or 6 months, and so now we share them. But if you don't have a cryo holder when you move, you order it, and it means for 4 or 6 months you can't do any cryo-EM experiments. You need a carbon evaporator and a way to freeze your grids, whatever it's a Vitrobot, a CP3, I don't know the name of the Leica equipment. If you can buy a Spotidon, it's even better. It's going to be available in 6 to 9 months, from what I heard. Or manual plunger is also very good. It never breaks. It costs a tenth of the price of a Vitrobot. And Mark has showed that he's getting amazing results with that. So please keep that in mind. You're going to need to be able to process your data. And you have two ways to go about it, to set up your own cluster or GPU boxes, a combination of both. Or to buy in into a large university cluster. Most universities have a cluster with different models to access them. But you're going to need at least one of the two options. I like very much the scheduler, means I'm not really in favor of buying GPU boxes for each individual in the lab unless you can put them on a scheduler. So Steve told me yesterday that that's something possible if you don't have a lot. But I think allocating resources from a scheduler makes sure that you use your resources at best. And you're gonna need a lot of storage space. I think we started with 300-400 terabytes. Now we upgraded to 1 petabyte, and we are just 2 labs sharing that. So it goes very, very quickly. You're gonna need tons of data. For one data set you collect, if you have 4 terabytes of data, people are probably gonna generate 20 to 30 terabytes of data. So you have close to a factor of 10 between data collection and processing. So depending on what you proposed to do when you were hired, most likely you focused on one project, unless you have been hired to develop methods. And if you want to push forward a biological project, you're gonna have to buy all the equipment to produce proteins. I don't think nowadays you can be hired saying you're gonna wait for someone to bring proteins unless you're developing methods. So you need freezers, FPLCs, incubators, centrifuges, and you need to see what you can borrow, but please keep in mind that all of that takes a long time to be delivered. Again, 3 to 6 months is typical. Freezers can take 3 months, and FPLC 2 to 3 months, so you're gonna need all of that. So what should be included in your startup package? The goal is to have enough to get going for at least 2 years, 3 years, to get your first grant funded. And so you should try to calculate approximately 2 to 3 people for 2 to 3 years. Your salary ideally could be covered for 2 to 3 years. You need enough funds to buy all the equipment you need that we just discussed, and to access your own microscopes. So institutes sometimes pay for service contracts, but it's pretty rare in the US. So you're gonna have to pay for that. And so you need to budget that in your startup package. And I mean, maybe one last comment here. It's good to keep in mind that some universities have flexibility on some aspects and not others. They have rules, what they can do about salaries, what they can do about startup package. And it's good to understand that and to also be flexible. To you can accept a no for one aspect if they can do something else for you, just because this is the way it works there, and that's totally fine. So the best advice I've been given about how to hire people is take your time. When you start, you really want people to get started, but it's much better to wait and to make sure that the people you hire you're happy with, because otherwise it's very difficult to start a lab if you have people that you're not satisfied with or creating a bad atmosphere. And I've tried to follow this advice and it worked very well so far. Graduate students are always eager to join new labs, and it's very exciting. When you have new PIs, graduate students want to rotate, and they have, obviously cryo-EM is very hard, so many people are interested in doing that. And rotations are very useful to see if it works, the relationship works between the student and the PI. And if you can give them a project where they are sure they're gonna use the microscope during the 10 weeks of the rotation, that's good to allow them to assess if they're gonna like using it. Postdocs can be more difficult when you start. Usually they prefer going to more established labs, but it's not impossible. And I would say also, hiring people with EM training is good, if possible, but it's not mandatory, because if you have been hired, supposedly you know exactly how to do it, you can train people. And the advantage is that you can hire people that know how to do things that you don't know how to do, and you can expand the spectrum of what you can do in the lab. Facility manager is something that can be discussed. My opinion is that when you start, unless if the institute can pay for a facility manager, which is pretty rare, otherwise you have to be the facility manager for the first few years, because it's very expensive to have a good facility manager, and when you start, you just don't have enough, you can't afford to have one. But after 2-3 years, it becomes critical to be able to hire someone. And obviously, I'm gonna talk that in the next slide, but you probably will receive many requests of collaboration or people that would like to be trained to use a microscope, and that takes a lot of time, and at that point, you probably need a facility manager if you want to be able to handle all the requests. So, what you're gonna be working on is most likely what you propose to do during your chalk talk. be open to collaborate. If you move to a city or a university where there was no single particle people, you're going to have tons of requests. And you need to learn how to handle that. You need to balance how many requests you're going to accept and how you're going to push your projects forward, collaborations forward. People are going to try to push sometimes quite hard on you to help them. And it's great to be able to help people, but when you have a small lab, you just can't do it all. If you have two people, three people, four people, you can't help 10 labs. Otherwise, you end up being spread way too thin. How to validate the equipment, I think Enshi covered that. You need a good test specimen, and we heard about a few of them, T20S, apoferidine, or aldolase, and try to collect data with a microscope, and you should get, now there are many, many papers with many different types of instruments, you should be able to get similar resolution reconstructions. Otherwise, there might be something wrong with your equipment. And to make, obviously you need service contract on the microscopes, so we decided not to have service contract on the camera. And so far, after 3 years, the cost of servicing by just paying as fee for service was much, much lower than having a service contract. So everybody, I'm happy to hear if someone does differently, but for us, it has worked pretty well. On the microscope, you obviously need a service contract. And it's good to have a good relationship with FEI. You might even consider meeting the service engineer before accepting the job if you want to interview the person. And if you don't have a facility manager in the first few years, ask people to report all the issues directly to you to make sure there is a centralized location to address all the problems that can arise in the microscope. So I believe it is my last slide. Yes. How we typically assess a new specimen. As I said, we love negative staining. We always start with that. It's easy. You see things very well. And you can avoid wasting a lot of time. If you look at a small protein in ice, it can take you a while before seeing it well and realizing the sample is not good. Well, if you start by staining it, you go to Morgani, 15 minutes later, you know if your sample is good. An hour later, you can have put the grid in the spirits and you have collected a full data set in stain with Legionon, and so on and so forth. For cryo-EM, we start screening usually on the spirits, well, TF20, depending on availability. And we have always collected data on our TF20 first. We did not have a cryos until recently. So before asking time to either NRAM or UCLA to collect data, we wanted to be sure that we can get a 4 to 6 angstrom map on the TF20. And if it is the case, we just put in the cryos and you can be sure you're gonna get a much, much better map. But we always accessed a cryos when we were sure our grids were as good as we could do and we're able to get reconstructions. So we are sure that we have different orientations, that the sample is suitable for high-resolution studies, and this makes the best use of the time. And if you do not have access to a high-end microscope, you have to make the best use of the time, otherwise you never move forward. And that's about it. I'm gonna let Joaquin share his experience. And again, I'd like to thank my lab. I'll be happy to answer any questions or comments or anything.